Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So the Media Project is underway, and we're going to give you a half hour of commentary, analysis, and if you're lucky, a little bit of insight into the media issues of the week. Howdy, folks.
We're going to give it to you whether you like it or not.
Whether you like it or not, right. Lean right into the microphone there, Dr. Chartok. We don't want to miss any
of the good words that you'd like to say.
That's Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Got to coach him on radio stuff all the time.
After all these years, I think he'd know.
Rosemary Armeo, professor of journalism and investigative reporter from the University of Albany, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in Albany, New York, from where this program originates, for those of you in Southern Indiana, Central Texas, Ohio, wherever it is that we
any of the other big towns,
the big places where this is popular. Speaking of popular, popular science is our leading story this week. You wouldn't think that a media program would ordinarily be looking at popular science, but what popular science has done is this. Popular science has had comments on their stories. You know, most of us have comments on the digital versions of stories that we run or on blogs. Popular science has turned off comments. Their situation is a little bit unusual, I would say, because it's a science magazine, right? And so what they're looking for typically in what they publish is, if not peer-reviewed, at least, because Popular Science is not a peer-reviewed magazine, but it is at least scientifically justified, and they're getting a lot of stuff that hasn't been.
Their comments has turned into politics. People are debating things like evolution or climate change, which, in the view of Popular Science, is not debatable. It's scientific fact that's different than, you know, whether you should have a Republican or a Democratic president. It's really fascinating that they have turned it off.
Well, in some cases, and I'm not saying in all cases, but in some cases, the comment section, it seems to me, has been a golden opportunity for incubating the nut fringe. I mean, you know. Where else are you going to be able to go and shoot off your mouth about something that is absolutely ridiculous?
Talk radio.
You know, I mean, talk radio, that's
yes,
true.
Same. On the other hand, though, Ellen, there are some publications that have comments that are so fascinating that you will see the articles publicized on Facebook saying, be sure to read the comments. New Yorker readers, that's like a whole different class. They extend and expand the articles that they're attached to. I love them. New York Times, which, by the way, has comments only on some stories because they have human moderators who go through everything to get out the trolls.
Well, I think that is the issue,
Rosemary. Yeah, they have an absolutely great section, too. The problem is they can't put comments on every story because it's simply too expensive to monitor all of them.
Right. Yeah. Well,
you have to pick and choose.
To me, if you have an umpire and they're being assiduous in knocking out the nuts, then I think, you know, you really have something that's worthwhile having. But I swear, I have seen it in some publications, I'm not going to name them, in which the same three guys are there all the time.
That is a great problem. We've had that problem a lot with Capital Confidential, our very popular blog out of the state capital in Albany. And, of course, everybody has a screen name, and we know certain screen names. We know they're going to be there on everything. These guys just sit there, and they get into arguments with each other. They know each other. You know, I Know Truth Is Mine, for example, is one of them, so that now people just call him IKTIM. And he's up against Bruno Silvergate. And these two guys go against each other all the time.
So explain something to me, both of you, because you're both so smart. Why is it that if you write a letter to the Times Union, you write the letter, you sign your name, and I'm sure if it's anything like other reputable things, you'll probably get a call back verifying that this is your letter.
At least. And yeah, probably your letter gets edited because most people don't write to our standard limit of length of 250 words. And probably we need to help them make their argument a little bit. We point it up for them. So we have an editor who actually works with people to make their letters better.
But then anybody can write any garbage and put it on the website.
And now, indeed, this was supposed to be the glory, the wonder of the internet, that there's unlimited space. There is no 250-word right. limit on the internet. So everyone could participate. And indeed, you don't have to sit down and take the effort to even write. You can call into some places that will put that online. Call-in letters are allowed, or you can just sit down and tap it out on a computer screen. And that was supposed to be great. And sometimes it really is. No one, I think, ever anticipated these regular curmudgeons who go through and just, it's
well,
nice.
These aren't curmudgeons.
Yes, they are. Some of them
are curmudgeons. I've always thought of a curmudgeon as somebody who likes just to stir the water, as opposed to...
You take some great pride in that label.
Yeah, as opposed to, well, watch it.
But
I wondered this much. Why can't we have them sign, as opposed to using these
well,
so-called
how would you know
names?
Who if it's a real name?
Well,
how
let
would
you... me put it this way. Either you could check every once in a while and see what you see.
Well, that's
you know, you could have an umpire who could check.
We do have umpires who check. Let me just make this clear. Every blog in the Times Union is moderated. What has been difficult in past years, which I think we've gotten better at, is making sure that our people are a bit more seasoned in their moderating. We have had certain people moderating blogs who really bought into the theory at the beginning,
yeah,
and this is true all over
right.
the country, that you let 1,000 flowers bloom, you know, let anything
sure, let go.
Anything
yeah.
should go. And now we're saying, you know, you're really creating a community where nobody wants to live if
yes.
you have all
sure.
this nasty stuff.
One of the suggested fixes for this problem, how can you take the promise of real interactivity between the producer and the consumers of news and the problem that's resulted, is to get other commenters to police and monitor sites so that if there were a troll that, and I, no, I have several of them on my blog, if I let in something from one of these people, other readers write in right away and say, you know, stop it. Here's the real point, and they get it back on track. To encourage that sort of citizen moderation is one of the things that might help, but
I don't
it takes
think so.
Time.
I don't think so. I'll be honest with you. I go online. We have something in our town called Topics. And PIX, I guess it is. And it degenerates so badly that they start to yeah. talk about their sexual practices with each other. They start to know, yeah. you know, you've been with your mother, you know that.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, that is really terrible stuff.
It happens even on YouTube. You'll call up, you know, an operatic aria, and it starts off with the quality of the music and how it compares to other renditions, and then soon you know it's how stupid somebody is or how they're deaf, and then their sexual habits, and it's crazy. So this happens everywhere.
And now,
Would you just eliminate it all? You'd do what popular science
did? I think it's a matter of tweaking it. I think you can do it. Even though Rex doesn't agree with me, I would put everybody's name, say, you sign your name. And we check every once in a while to make sure that it is your name.
How do you do that?
You call them up.
Well, yeah, but like they don't have to. Oh, so they have to list their phone number, too.
Well, that's
they list
not
their
a bad
name
idea.
And their phone number.
Okay, well, that's one way to do it. But I
spot
still think just the very.
About.
Yes. But I think the very act of making people sign their own names. A guy writes to me last week and he says, too much Pete Seeger on the radio. I don't want to hear any more about Pete Seeger. It's stupid. And I'm furious because I love Pete and because he's been so generous to WMC and all the rest of it. And the guy signs his name with like Jim or Pete or whatever. Actually, that's not what it was. And I say, who are you? And he writes back, you have no right to ask me who I am. I am anonymous and I have every right to be anonymous. I say, I don't have every right to answer you. Believe me, this is it. I'm not going to engage you. So there is now a presumption of the right to be anonymous and to throw garbage around. I don't like it.
But if you allow anonymity but get rid of the garbage, that would be okay, wouldn't it, with
yes.
you?
Yeah.
Well, so that's, I think, basically what we should encourage. The difficulty is with something as big as the New York Times, really moderating everything is virtually impossible.
Well, but the problem for you guys is, not for me, but the problem for you guys is that there have been all kinds of predictions of the no newspapers in so many years, or this, I guess we're going to talk about that, or maybe not, no many mm-hmm. newspapers in so many years and the rest.
So same thing with radio, by the way. Yeah. I mean, the same. Then why would people need a local radio station if they can get the stuff digitally from
the TV?
Radio is in less trouble because you still have to drive the car and listen to something. And I think that until they come out with self-driven cars, then you got another whole issue.
But you can still get it from a digital source rather than from your local entity. That, so it's just like a local newspaper. Yeah. You have the same. I think you're disrupted the same way. You just haven't quite faced up to it as frankly as we have.
No, Rex, I don't think so. But why get dragged into a
I wish all of the media were robust and thriving.
Yeah, no, but okay. I'm just really worried about the fact that we have a newspaper company called Digital First, right? Digital First. Now, they know what they're doing. They're Digital First because we know where we're going and it's not going to be in newspapers and we're going to name ourselves Digital First and you need the numbers. You guys are all need the numbers. That's your problem, Rexy. You have to be able to say to your bosses, look, here's the traffic level. Now we can sell ads on our web pages, and that's what this is all about. And so in the same time that we can bemoan the fact that there's some nutty people who are doing this kind of stuff, trolls and the like, you also have the competing value of you want the numbers, and the more people who are on there yelling at each other and screaming at each other, the better off you are.
Not necessarily, right?
Well, I think making money is a problem for the media. I personally like the BBC model where the government gives it to you for the citizens we serve. If we're not doing this, if we're not accommodating people to get hits, to get revenue, then we're having fund drives that also sap time and energy that could be going into programming.
Well, I would argue the whole fund drive thing with you because I happen to think the fund drives are a great time for people to get together, to say what they like, what they don't like, to talk to each other.
Except they have to say it with their name attached. You don't accept any criticism that is anonymous, right?
Basically, yes.
Aha. Okay. Well,
what's wrong with that?
Well, I don't know. Why should a listener have to tell you who they are for their criticism to have validity?
Well, I think
maybe they're afraid that you're going to get even with them, that you're going to come after them or something.
Well, yeah. Do you go after people? I mean, that's a terrible thing to say. Do you go after people in your newspaper?
What power does the newspaper have to go after?
But actually, to your point that you raised earlier about traffic, it would be a really wonderful thing if we could convince publishers, and some enlightened publishers I think are coming to this, that it shouldn't be simply the number of page views that is the standard by which we judge and sell advertising, that it should rather be engagement. How much time do people spend with it? What kind of quality interaction do you have with your viewers? And I think increasingly you will see that as the internet matures, and you'll see advertising being sold based upon the engagement of the viewers and the nature of the viewership.
I'm interested in the word you just used. You said matures.
Uh-huh.
As the I always internet thought matures. It's matures.
Matures?
Yeah. Yeah.
With a CH mature, in the middle?
As you mature.
No, as you mature.
It's mature, too.
It's a T. A T has just to sound like T, not ch.
Okay, now let's do debacle, debacle.
Debacle, yes, absolutely.
That? Words that you only read and you don't say too often.
Amateur. Then. Anyway,
amateur.
Issue.
Amateur.
That's what Mario Cuomo used to say. Do we have an issue with this? You mentioned something earlier, though, that was interesting, too. It had to do with this question of paper.
Paper.
And actually, I have to speak to a state journalism group next week on this very topic. Something of a debate is coming with someone representing the Syracuse newspapers, where they have stopped doing a full newspaper 7 days a week. And our side, which basically has said, you know, we're investing in a press. We believe that there is more life ahead for print. And Jeff Bezos was asked about this, who just bought the Washington Post for $250 million. Jeff Bezos, the CEO of
Amazon.
Amazon. Thank you. Woo. And he said that to the Today Show. He said someday, he was asked, will there be a time when the Washington Post isn't on paper? He said someday. It could be decades. And then here's what he said. I think printed newspapers on actual paper may be a luxury item. It's sort of like, you know, people still have horses, but it's not their primary way of commuting to the office. So, you know, will paper become the luxury way that we deliver content? And digital will be
The standard.
But don't you think it has to do also with age?
Interestingly, BuzzFeed has done a very interesting article. It came out of a conference where people talked about this, and the numbers show that No new newspaper subscribers or TV viewers are being born. Both the people who watch TV regularly and read regularly, that's skewing older and older and older. So what does that mean? Well, it means either at the age of 47, you instantly turn into a newspaper subscriber and turn on the TV, or that increasingly they're not looking at paper or on regular broadcast.
It's interesting. I don't. There was no simple measure of radio, but I would imagine it has to be the same, that Pew's studies show that by 2015, almost half of all television viewing will be done by folks over the age of 50. Right. It's not just news. Half of all television viewing will be by people over 50.
I mean, yeah, my kids don't watch TV anymore. You do it on your computer. You turn up and you watch old episodes or one episode after another of what used to be serial television. It's all changed. It reminds me a lot of Star Trek, where Captain Kirk in the supposed 21st or 22nd century sits there and pulls out this thing, this object, and holds it reverentially and looks at it. It's a book. It's a book. And he has it. It's like an antiques collection now, because he still likes that, to read the way people did in the olden days.
Amazing.
Our hero, Captain Kirk, still a wonderful guy. Actually,
prescient.
There was this, I think it was probably at this same conference where there was this conversation about the aging of the newspaper reader, the TV viewer, that a conference topic emerged around the issue of what might media titans have done differently 15 years ago as the internet age was dawning. And the people who were in those positions said, you know, you really couldn't have done much differently. Nowadays, we are criticized for giving away the content that we were charging for.
Sure.
But if you had built what we now call a paywall around your website 15 years ago, you would have been irrelevant. You would have disappeared.
I have watched you, Rex, on this program struggle with this issue.
Yeah.
You know, in the very beginning, it was, should we, shouldn't we, we're not. It's just there wasn't a right answer.
No. There's no way to forestall technology any more than you could say that, you know, the analogy of the buggy whip makers, any more than every buggy whip maker could have stopped the advance of the automobile or could have figured out, well, we've got to come up with some way for people to buy buggy whips. Now, of course, what you do is you turn your buggy whip company into a steering wheel company or something.
But, you know, predictions, this business of who gets born and what they'll be doing 50 years from now, sometimes that doesn't quite work out. I was struck the other day, and you're looking at me as if, what is he going to say now?
Well, I always feel like that.
But I was struck by the fact that they are now predicting, and this has direct relevance to what we've been talking about, I think, that the first 200-year-old people are being born right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Amazing.
That the first 200-year-old.
Well, they're 200 years old. They'll watch TV and read newspapers.
They don't regress. It doesn't go that way. But I think it's probably true. Look, my father lived to the ripe old age of, I think, of 73. And now 73 is regarded as the new 50.
Yeah.
Said Dr. Chartok, 72.
72 years old.
One other thing about the study that we keep referring to, looked at the decline of traditional print and TV, is what young and old people are looking at. They looked at a variety of TV shows where news is administered. And Colbert and The Daily Show, that's Jon Stewart, have roughly double what the most outstanding print journalists get. Like 43% of the audience is between 18 and 29 for Colbert. And for the Wall Street Journal, for example, it's 24%.
But it gets even worse than that, Rosemary. I mean, I read a study a couple of years ago which said that half of the young people in this country get all of their news from The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Actually, you could do worse than getting it all from The Daily
That's
Show.
That's what I think. At least he's telling the truth. He doesn't have to say, he said, she said. Yeah, he just does it.
He covers major issues. He does a lot of investigative stuff, too. He uses some of the techniques of turn-of-the-century investigative reporters. I think he's
good. Pretty cool. Yeah. Actually, since most of the people listening to this are hearing it on a public radio station, we should point out that NPR's numbers are very low, in fact, lower than print.
And lower than Rush Limbaugh.
52% of NPR listeners are below 50. So that means that 48% are, it's kind of like television. NPR has about half of the listeners are 50 or above. And in terms of the youngest group, 18 to 29, you're right. Yeah, NPR is 1 point below Rush Limbaugh.
Right.
He gets 14% of his listeners are that young, and 13% of NPR's are that young.
Yeah, I found
Tell
that
me something
kind of
I
terrifying.
Don't know.
So, well, I'm just saying it's not just print readers who are...
And look at that.
Rex
the network
wounded
evening.
To the quick. Wounded to the quick, you know. I mean, it's just non-dignified the way he keeps coming back to argue that he's better than we are. I would never reduce myself to that.
Just no,
the
no
network
worse than.
Evening news was really interesting to me because it's among young people, it's only 9% even watch it. And even among older cohorts, 65 and over, it's 25%. That's like a core. These used to be so powerful, so important, and now they're really marginalized, you could say.
Absolutely. Absolutely true. If you're just joining us, the Media Project originates in Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rex Smith. Now, though my two colleagues here both have the distinction of having been or being faculty, and so here's one thing I want to ask you. Yeah. I don't understand this. During the shooting at the Navy Yard in Washington, a journalism professor at Kansas University tweeted something. He said, hashtag Navy Yard shooting, the blood is on the hands of the hashtag NRA. Next time, let it be your sons and daughters. Shame on you. And, well, I think we'll let the rest of it go because it
I think it's the rest of it that got him into so much trouble.
Well, what
I don't think you can let it go.
What was the rest?
He said, may God damn you.
Not like the curse, but may God
damn you. Right. And the question is this. So he was put on leave, administrative leave, because of the tweet. Now, the question that I have, he's an associate professor. I would have thought the tenure would protect a person like that.
Anxiously await a verdict on my tenure. I thought, I thought that was the thing I'd be protected from. I thought this was a horrible thing. This is at Kansas University. Mm-hmm. State senator called for him to be fired. The NRA, of course, screamed bloody murder. And it appears to have had an effect.
Well, I know this is grammatically incorrect, and I apologize for it, but we say it in the Berkshires in terms of what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
And so don't I.
You associate yourself with her remarks.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so don't I agree with you?
Yeah. So it is curious, but you're right. Kansas, where, you know, the first, Wisconsin.
No,
or Minnesota, depending which McCarthy you meant.
No, I didn't say McCarthy. I said Dorothy.
Oh, Dorothy.
You
I
said
thought
Kansas,
you said,
I said
McCarthy.
Dorothy. You said Kansas, I said Dorothy.
Oh, my goodness. We're declining here. The professor did a blog commenting about all this. I thought that was interesting, too. He explained, no, I wasn't cursing them. And I think he was careful in the way he wrote it. I was stating I would like to see God put judgment on these people. I don't care if I'm criticized for being too quick to judge, too harsh in my criticism, or too strident. The time has passed for niceties and tact. I hope that he prevails.
It sounds to me like that should be protected free speech.
Absolutely.
And
also protected under academic freedom.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it'll get up to the Supreme Court. It'll be a 5-4 decision against them.
That could happen.
Well, we'll see.
There's other bad things happening legally. We have a case in Joliet, Illinois.
Did you see that one,
Rex?
What was that?
That was interesting where...
A reporter could face jail time for not divulging a source.
A jailhouse interview.
Mm-hmm.
It seems quite clear that mostly court cases have gone in favor of journalists when these are involved, but the reporters want to find out how he got the information he did, how the police reports about this case were leaked to him. And the judge in the case is backing up the police, saying, yes, he has to divulge this. So it's another case where the courts are not in a very press-friendly mood these days.
And Illinois has a shield law, so I can't believe that this wouldn't be protected by the shield law.
Exactly.
You can have a judge who can run you around the block for a while.
Just the cost of it. He immediately fined this reporter $1,000, like, don't walk out until you give me $1,000, which, you know, for most journalists, that's a hefty payment. So he plainly is trying to put pressure on him to just give the information, which is, I hope, not the way most of our courts operate.
Excellent. One final thing here, because we invite people to participate by sending us mail at media@wamc.org. And we have a listener who says, hello, Alan. My colleagues and I have been discussing a problem we'd like you to take up. We never hear reporters asking the politicians who are against the Affordable Care Act about the provisions. Are they really in favor of keeping people tied to their employers if they have pre-existing conditions, et cetera? Why aren't reporters asking the politicians about the policy goals and how to make the provisions of the law work? So that's a good question.
It is a good one. I like that letter. It made me think. One answer is that the reporters don't know the policy issues well enough to ask great questions.
Agreed.
Number two is they are asking, and in the wealth of material, the answers are getting lost. And number three is the question's a little, I wouldn't phrase it that way. Certainly, it's definitely pointed. It's like, well, what would you do? You know, it's challenging. And we don't ask questions in a challenging way.
Well, you don't. I don't know. That's, you could sometimes ask a question in a challenging way in the interest of eliciting an interesting response.
Yeah, that's which, of course, is what she's asking us.
Yeah. But it does, I think the point that she's probably trying to make is, are we getting too caught up in the politics of the issue rather than the substance?
Right. Sure.
Which
right.
is a very fair question to ask.
It is. And I have to say, I know that we have to go. And I have to say that there's still the intuitive sense on the part of many journalists that this will not make people pick up the paper and stay with it and read it. It'll be too boring.
And on that point, we will have to go, folks. And we hope you'll join us next week on The Media Project.
They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.